Welcome to the Mind Stogie Mr. Goji podcast with your hosts, Don Gonzalez
and Mark Connolly,
where we get together and discuss everything from the sublime
to the ridiculous.
Welcome back to Mind Stogie Mr. Goji. Our first segment is, what are you drinking and what are you smoking? We'll start with Mark.
Well, this is a repeat. I am smoking an Arturo Fuente 858 natural wrapper. And I am drinking Glenmorangie. Is this a 10-year-old?
Yes.
As always, the Arturo Fuente is smoking fine and the Glenmorangie tastes like scotch.
Yeah, I think we actually profiled that two or three episodes ago.
Yes. But I like it. It's not boring. It does have, what did I think I had last time? Apricot or something like that?
Yes.
Peach?
Apricot.
Yes.
Kevin, what are you smoking?
Smoking a Gurkha Ghost Exorcist, which I've mentioned before is my favorite Gurkha. I don't think I've ever profiled it. Delicious. And I'm drinking tea.
All right. What's the size of the cigar? Looks like it's maybe a double Robusto.
I'd agree with that. It was about probably a 6-inch cigar when it started.
All righty. All right. Well, I'm drinking an Arturo Fuente Hemingway series Between the Lines. And this is a special edition cigar that's normally only available during Christmas time, and I think I actually bought it during Christmas. It's the same shape and size of the bestseller, which is 4.5 inches long, and it's a 54 ring gauge at its widest point, which is at the foot of the cigar. It's called a barber pole because it actually has two different wrappers. A lot of people mistakenly believe that it's the regular broadleaf Maduro and the regular natural Cameroon, and that's not the case. The wrapper is both Connecticut U.S. broadleaf and then Connecticut shade. And so the way they do it, they kind of do a double wrap. So you get, you know, this kind of like a candy cane or a barber pole looks. The filler is Dominican filler. It's a medium body cigar. You know, picking up some creamy flavor. It's actually on the lighter side of medium. This cigar, because it's a limited edition, retails for $19. The one thing that I wanted to say that I think is kind of cool about this cigar, you know, this is at least the third different Fuente Hemingway that I've talked about. And you can take the same filler, put a different wrapper on it, and you change the taste profile of the cigar.
Yeah.
And so it's just interesting to me the way they experiment that way to draw out different flavors and different tastes. So I, too, am drinking the Glenmorangie, the 10-year-old. Pairs well with this cigar. I pick up little hints of orange in the scotch. And this cigar is smoking well, as would be expected from a Fuente.
I'll probably never, ever try that cigar because I don't have Jerry Jones money.
We all choose to spend our money in different ways.
Yes. Speaking of Jerry Jones, though, let's not.
Here's the funny thing about it. You have smoked $19 cigars.
I know.
I've just gifted them to you most of the time.
You had said last time, post-show, that we would add the, what are you reading?
Ah, thank you for reminding me,
Mark. So what are you reading?
What am I reading? So I'm actually, I don't know the, well, I'll tell you, one of the books I'm reading is related to the episode that we had a couple of weeks ago, and it's called Plan of Life. And it's basically a lot of what we talked about, but in further detail. The other book that I'm reading, I can't remember the name of it. It's written for people who are spiritual directors. And they use that term very broadly. I'll put a link in the show notes when after the show I'll remember the name of the book. But it talks about the need for personal sanctity and where you need to be in your prayer life if you're going to mentor other people.
Okay.
The book was recommended to me a few years ago by a really good friend of mine from Opus Dei, because he said, look, you're essentially a spiritual director to these men that you have in Joe Catholic. You should learn about what you need to do. And it's just, yeah. It's a fascinating read. I shared an excerpt from it with you too a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I've been reading it very slowly because I'm really trying to absorb it, which is not the normal way for me to read books. Yeah, it's been moving. Oh, actually, there's a third book that I've been reading at night, my nighttime read, as I close out my nighttime prayers. And it's a series that Scepter Publishers have started. It's called the Coach By series. They take different saints, and an author will take some of their writings and do a synthesis or discussion about how we can live our lives through whatever their teachings are. So the one I'm reading right now is called Coach by St. Jose Maria.
Okay, interesting.
So it's material that I've seen before, but with a kind of a different twist.
Yeah. I have up in the bathroom The Furrow, the Forge, and the Way, which you gave me. That's nice, easy, quick read.
Yeah.
So Kevin, what are you reading?
So I'm actually working through about three different books, but one that I'm really trying to get my hands really dug into is the spiritual biography of J.R.R. Tolkien, which focuses on his faith life and how that affected different aspects of his life. One of the things the author makes very clear in the beginning is if you're looking for Lord of the Rings, you're in the wrong place. It does give suggested material for that. Any reference to Lord of the Rings is strictly going to be in relation to his faith life. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm reading the third book in the Witcher series, and I'm also going very slowly through the diaries of St. Faustina.
Nice. Don, were you the person that told me about Mortimer Adler's How to Read a Book? Are you familiar with that book?
Yeah, we've talked about it. Okay. I mean, we've talked about Mortimer Adler before, but I don't recall recommending that book to you.
Okay. Must have been Nathan, Dr. Ryder. When you said you were reading it very slowly and carefully, it reminded me of How to Read a Book. I have shifted gears and went to something really light and fluffy. Free Will and the Rebel Angels in Medieval Philosophy by Tobias Hoffman. I actually found out about this book from, I have a subscription to a periodical called The Thomist. And it was a book review about that book in The Thomist about this. I've always been fascinated by the whole, what's the thinking that went on in, or what is, I guess, the prevailing belief as to why, or the prevailing theories, I guess, as to why some angels rebelled. So I'm not very far into it yet, so I don't have any insights to share with you, but it is an interesting read. It is a little dense, I will say that.
All right. So our main topic for tonight, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a spiritual game plan, and the week before that,
different spiritualities.
Yeah, spiritualities. And in the midst of talking about both of those, we touched on some other subjects like formation and evangelization. So tonight, what we're going to talk about is, what does evangelization look like for lay people in the regular world?
Right.
Our rule of thumb is to always start with some definitions. I've got basically three. And not all definitions, but I think it frames the conversation. So the idea that the laity is called to evangelize is rooted in the gospel, in particular Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 to 20. This is known as the Great Commission. This is Jesus speaking. He says, "Go therefore and make disciples of the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the name of the Son and of the name of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you." So the church basically teaches that that applies to all of us.
Hmm.
And that it's that notion of going out and bringing people, and then the part of teaching them, that's formation.
Right.
And then sending them back out. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 905, the context of this is it was talking about our mission as priests, prophets. So the threefold roles,
yeah,
is the right word? Priest, prophet, and king.
Yep.
And our prophetic role, prophecy, is a form of evangelization. It says lay people fulfill the prophetic mission through evangelization. Skipping a bunch of stuff, and then it says in the ordinary circumstances of the world. So we've talked about that before, about the idea that the laity, not only do we make up the majority of the church, but we're able to go places where the ordained may not, and we're in the thick of it, so to speak. And then finally, I wanted to define a term or describe what it is. You may have heard me talk about apostolate versus the notion of ministry. Ministry is more of an intra thing as it relates to things that are building up, like the church from the interior.
Right.
Apostolate is more exterior. It's the root of the word is like apostolic. And as it relates to the laity, it's the sanctification of the temporal order by spreading the kingdom or spreading the good news. So those are three points to kind of frame. And, you know, one of the things that came to mind for me that we might touch on, doesn't have to be immediately, but throughout the conversation, is maybe we think about the idea of the notion of personal evangelization and then more formal and institutional evangelization. I guess going back to the question, what does that look like? And I mean, I guess part of this is for me was, do the laity really evangelize?
So I want to add a little bit of color to the priest, prophet, and king. You may have heard the term that they're referred to as the three munera. Have you ever heard that term before? So the munera comes from Latin, and it basically translates to duty and obligation. So priest, prophet, and king have duties and obligations associated with that. And since we're baptized into Christ and we share in his priestly mission, his prophetic, and his kingly, we do have a duty and an obligation to the Great Commission. I think most lay people don't think that it's their job to evangelize. They think that is the role of the priesthood. And so when you ask somebody, what does that look like? They're not going to know how to answer that question for the most part. Because, and what it'll come down to is, well, maybe be an elector, maybe teach an RCIA, but they may not even see that as evangelizing.
Yeah, they probably think of it as service.
Right. But it is evangelizing. And I think it's worthwhile for people to recognize that when they're involved in that way.
Okay, that's fair.
And then you had said, you know, sort of informally, right, versus institutionally.
Yeah, I said like a personal evangelization, yeah, versus more formal institutional stuff. What I was thinking about is like, and some of these are apostolates, you know, like NET. I don't remember what that stands for. National Evangelization Team, I think is what it stands for. And that's more geared towards, it's a group of college students that band together. They get trained, they get formed, and then they go out and basically do workshops for high school students. Focus is something similar, but I think that's college-age students that they speak to. And then, of course, you got things like, you know, like, I think it's going to be at actually Kevin's church this year. You have like the big men's conference that they have in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And all of these were grassroots things that they weren't formally created by the institutional church, but they are kind of institutional. They're groups,
Right.
and they've and
You're associated with some sort of a group that's got some structure.
right. I mean, I would say the same thing about Opus Dei. I'd say the same
Right.
thing about the Dominicans. Someone founded them, and we all have. Like for you have a mission of evangelization through preaching and teaching,
Right.
and in Opus Dei we do too, and it's done more through one-on-one friendship is kind of the emphasis.
Right.
So, well, I guess what I wanted to do was talk about and maybe acknowledge some of the things that we see other people doing that are authentic evangelization, and then maybe also talk about some things that we can do with intentionality to be.
Yeah. So I 2 weeks ago had a meeting with a guy named Pete. He is a he was petitioning to become a I think permanent profession to the lay Dominicans. And this man is very intentional about his evangelizing. He will talk to anybody. And he will always bring up Christ, and he will ask if he can pray with them. And it was kind of inspiring, to be honest with you, because I don't have that part of me developed at all. I've never actually walked up to somebody and said, "Can I pray with you?" or been in a conversation with somebody where they've, made me aware of some trial or trauma in their life, and I've never just said, "Well, let's pray about it." And so he really kind of opened my eyes to a lack in my daily routine because those opportunities do come up. There's a lady at work whose father died rather suddenly over the holidays, apparently fell down and was otherwise healthy, fell down, I think hit his head. Next thing you know, he was dead. And, I told her I was sorry to hear about that, but I didn't do anything else with that. And sometimes at work, it's difficult to do that. But this guy, he's retired, but just in his walking around, going in a convenience store or in the grocery store or just wherever he happens to be, he'll see somebody and he'll feel like he needs to go talk to them, and he just goes and talks to them. So he's very intentional in his personal. Just, catch as catch can kind of a situation of evangelizing. Yeah, I was very impressed with what he had to tell us there. For me, it's all within the Dominican order, and so it's I have to kind of assess that and go, okay, well, am I using the excuse of, well, I'm in the order of preachers to not individually preach when those opportunities come up. I mean, it's really caused me to do a lot of, introspection and go, okay, well, what are you doing? I mean, it's fine. This podcast, I think, is evangelization. I'm going to be giving a presentation next month on Gaudium et Spes to our lay Dominican group, and that's evangelization. But I remember one time, associated with some Bible church, the pastor of the church was saying, "We can't save seats and saints." And his point was, if you're sitting there in church preaching, of course, he was coming from a once saved, always saved background. So that's why it was seats and saints. If you're looking out across your church, it's either full of people that have already come to Jesus or there's empty chairs. So you can't save seats and saints. And I think, Pete made me think of that as well. Just that kind of idea of what are you doing? Are you going out there and catching people that aren't in church? So like when I'm giving a talk on Gaudium et Spes to all the people who are either discerning to be a Dominican or they're candidates or they're temporary professed or they're permanently professed, kind of talking to saints, if you will.
Like preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Do you think of your writing as evangelization? I mean, some of it is very Christocentric, while other parts of it are not, but.
Yeah, so one of the things I do try to do with my writing is I'm always trying to find out what the truth is. And I think that is a type of evangelization, although it's maybe in some ways a sort of stealth evangelizing. And you know, I got to kind of ask myself, how valuable is that? I feel like it could be, you know, you're still planting seeds. And I think that's part of evangelization also, is to just kind of put it out there and plant seeds and see what the Holy Spirit does with that person, with that seed. And I even kind of rewrote part of my about page on my newsletter, where I said, you know, to the effect of, I hope I give you something to think about that you think about long after you've forgotten where you read it. So, yeah, I think that is, and I am kind of intentional about that, because I am very specifically just trying to get at the truth of whatever issue that I'm talking about. And it's all informed by my Catholic upbringing.
For sure. Well, you may get people thinking, and that the Holy Spirit does the rest of the work.
Right.
You know, the thing that got me thinking about this was recently one of the gospel readings for Mass was the story of the men who were taking their friend to see Jesus and in Capernaum. I think that's where it takes place. And the house is full. They can't get in through the,
right.
the doorway. So they go up to the top of the roof and they tear the roof.
Open, yeah.
Open to lower him in.
Yeah.
And it was telling because it was their faith that Jesus acknowledged as part of the miracle.
Yeah.
And they brought him. And during that same time frame, shortly before that reading, there's a reading of when John the Baptist is sitting somewhere and he sees Jesus walk by and he says, "Behold the Lamb of God." And he tells it, I think it's Andrew and Nathaniel.
Yeah.
He's
the dude.
He's the dude. That's what I was going to say to quote Dan. He's the dude.
Yeah.
And they go follow him. So at the prompting of a friend that they trust, they follow Jesus.
Right.
And then.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And then. Andrew is Simon's brother, right?
Right.
He goes back and finds Simon. He's like, "We found the Messiah.
Yeah.
You need to meet him." And whether Simon accepted that or not, at face value, that's his brother. So,
right.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's telling to me that there are at least three different times where friends or family members, just through the invitation and the reflection, the two different reflections that I read, that went along with the gospel those 2 days, talked about the fact that our jobs in evangelization isn't to save souls. Mm. We don't do that.
Right.
Christ does that.
Right.
Our job is to get them in front of Jesus. In other words, yeah. They have an encounter with Christ, and he does the rest.
Yeah.
And that just got me thinking about, what are all the different ways that we can find opportunities to invite people? So one of the ideas, and this is, so in Opus Dei, we talk a lot about apostolate. And that's the way we frame things. I mean, which apostolate is interchangeable with evangelization, if you ask me.
Remind me that I have a thought experiment when you're done with that.
Okay. That have something to do with the... all the stuff with Joe Catholic? No.
No.
I'm not on the same sync like you two are. One of the things that St. Jose Maria talks about in The Way, which is one of his, it's his first and most popular book, just a collection of points, is the apostolate of confession. Of people that we have in our lives that we know that are Catholic and maybe they've been away from the church, inviting them to get a reconciliation. It was really interesting to me that today's gospel reading was about the Pharisees getting after Jesus and his disciples because they eat the grain
right
on the Sabbath. And the reflection was about how
the Pharisees... eat it or go picking it.
They picked it and ate it.
Yeah.
Is that corn?
They were working.
I think it was corn.
Maybe. They have corn there?
I don't know.
I think corn was a U.S. product. Probably wheat.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I think it's corn. We'll do a fact check. Nevertheless, what the reflection was saying is that the Pharisees were all about the thou shalt not.
Yeah.
And the analogy that the priest who wrote the reflection said was, and this resonated with me big time. He's like, you're not going to get somebody to go to Mass with you who hasn't been to Mass by saying they're condemned to hell because it's a mortal sin.
Right.
You invite them.
Yeah.
You make it a positive thing. I was like, hey, you know, why don't you join me for Mass today? And then afterwards we can go have brunch.
Right.
Without any sort of judgment. And I guess what it was, is, and maybe this is the theme, is that evangelization at its foundation is an act of charity.
You had mentioned earlier the term the apostolate of friendship. And so, yeah, that's I think that's a very admirable piece of the Opus Dei spirituality, is that apostle of friendship, and it is charity. I mean, friendship is a type of love between people. So yeah, I like that.
But I think one of the things that I've shared with y'all off air is that, you know, in my journaling, and we talked about my journaling previously, I do this synthesis on Saturdays, and one of the overarching themes for like the last 18 months has been be bold.
Right.
And just like you, like that didn't come naturally to me. And Stacy and I are currently in this school called the Encounter School of Ministry, which at its core, it's about developing a stronger relationship with the Holy Spirit and leaning into the gifts of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And one of the themes early on has been lean into it, be bold. And that has not been easy for me. There's one guy in the group that he goes to one of the local malls on Saturdays and they go stand out in the walkways and go up to people and ask them if they can pray with them. I'm like, yeah, I'm not there.
Yeah.
But I got this idea from one of them. And, you know, we have people that, at least I think we all have people that we encounter on the daily. And, you know, part of my morning ritual, it's more efficient from both the time and, at least in my mind, monetarily, because time is money, for me to get my breakfast at Starbucks in the morning. I just don't have enough time to make my breakfast and coffee and all that stuff. And I see the same baristas every day.
Right.
You know, I've joked before with you guys that I walk in the door and they're like, Norm. So it's like Norm on Cheers. Right. And the other day, I told one of the baristas, I was like, you know, I was praying the other day and you popped in my head, which was true. And I said, and the thought was, I should ask you what you need prayer for. And I said, what can I pray for you for?
Yeah.
And one of the things I learned from the Encounter School is like very few people are going to say, no, that's all right. I don't need you to pray for me. She thought about it. She gave me something to pray for. And so I'm praying for her now. Now, some of these people take it to the next level and they say, can I pray for you? And they'll tell you what they want you to pray. And so I have permission to pray with you right now.
Mm.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
But one of the things that has resonated with me, and this kind of hit me from going back and watching some of the old YouTube videos of Joe Catholic, that one thing I think we can all do with intentionality, and it doesn't require like being heroic in any sort of way, but we got to be different than everybody else.
Right.
And like when you reach that point in your place of employment, when people start calling you the Christian guy or the religious guy or you're the spiritual guy, I used to not embrace that. Now I do, because that means people see a difference. It can be in little things. You know, it can be like, you know, when somebody says, let's cut out of work early or whatever. And you're like, I'm not doing that because I'm not going to steal time.
Yeah.
And you're just planting seeds. And, you know, you're not judging anybody. But if you're living out your faith and people see that it's different, I don't know that I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I do know that my former principal was moved by the way I responded to my mother's death.
Right. I remember you telling me about that.
Because the following day, I was still laughing and being cheerful, and I wasn't being, you know, down in the dumps. And he asked me point blank, he's like, how can you be here? And I just, you know, it gave me an opportunity for dialogue because I was able to say, well, if I believe what I believe, then there's only one way for me to react.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, just planting seeds. These cigars do not like sitting when people are talking.
No. I read some cigar review one time where the guy was basically saying, the only proper place for your cigar is in your hand. You should never put it down.
Yeah, I think I agree.
It's easier if you're sitting outside because then you can just flick the ashes everywhere. Appreciate that y'all don't do that in here.
It seemed like I did that last night. Not on purpose.
No. So one thing that I've been thinking about, and it kind of crystallized during this conversation, I don't know about you, but stuff rumbles around in the back of my mind and may rumble around for days and then kind of surface. And I know I've been thinking about it, but I've kind of been letting, I don't know if this is even real, but what I feel like is happening is my subconscious is working on the problem or working on the thought or the idea. And then at some point it comes out. And, you know, I've said before, and I know you've heard me say this before, and I said it at a Joe Catholic meeting, you know, it's not my job to save souls. My job is to tell the truth. But I think I need to be a little less abstract. My job is to lead people to Christ. And I think that there's a certain cowardice, if you will, for me to phrase it as I'm just trying to bring people to truth, because who's going to argue against that? You say, well, I'm going to, you know, I need to bring you to Christ. Well, people will argue against that. And it also just puts a fine point to the goal. So I think there's a value to what I say, but I think that I need to get less abstract. I think I hide in the abstraction.
Well, maybe there is another thing to consider is like, who or what is your audience?
Yeah.
That maybe sometimes the softer approach, knowing the truth is a capital T.
Right.
As you're talking to someone, and that's the gateway to developing a relationship or dialogue with the person that actually eventually leads. It's like the conversations that I have with my friend who's an atheist. We've been having these conversations now for going on 10 years. I don't know that that needle has moved significantly at all.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that we've had some monumental moments in those 10 years where I've had an opportunity to be Christ to him and show him he's loved. And for a grown man to tell another man, I love you.
Yeah.
In a platonic way.
Right.
Is a big deal in this modern world. And I've heard those words from him.
Yeah.
Which tells me that there's something there.
Well, it's all the charity. I mean, we learned this past weekend in the Cowboy game. Love conquers all.
You just couldn't help yourself, could you?
I think I've told you, Tiffany told me, my daughter, that if the path from where she was to becoming a Catholic was, you know, 100 yards, it took her 10 years to go 10 yards, and it took her like 3 months to go the other 90. So, and I think that analogy of planting a seed is the same kind of thing. The seed sits there in the ground and it grows, we know not how. And then if you're just looking at the dirt, nothing's happening for a long time. And then all of a sudden a shoot comes out and then it just blossoms. So maybe you'll see that with your
Yeah,
friend.
I think it's funny that we're talking about planting seeds because that's your favorite.
It is. Yep.
I think there are other subtle ways that we can... San Jose Maria talks about cheerfulness and just the way that we engage people daily with a smile. And
yeah.
I had a moment today where I was, you know, my pipes are frozen. Well, some of my pipes are frozen and I can't use my washing machine. So I set out to buy myself a pair of pants, and I own a Jeep. It's relevant. And there was a Jeep parked next to me. And it was called Barbie something or another, and it had pink highlights.
Oh, really?
And there's a thing in the Jeep community where if you see somebody else's Jeep and you like it or respect it, you put a rubber duck on it.
Right.
Well, I happen to have a pink rubber duck in my Jeep.
Yeah.
And the way you're supposed to do it, you put it in the handle. So I was very intentional. I got it out of my Jeep, and I put it on the driver's side handle. And as I was walking in, she and her, I think it was her son, were walking out, and she got super excited.
Really?
That it's called being ducked.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, hey, it's very fitting because it's a pink duck to go with the pinkness of your
Jeep.
I made her day.
Yeah.
And the lady inside the store was, she's like, she was so excited that you gave her that duck. And I was like, well, it's a Jeep thing. And it's just a sign that you like their Jeep.
Yeah.
But I think little gestures like that, like I'll probably never see that woman again.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the things that I wanted to get out of this conversation is for people to start thinking about ordinary ways that they can evangelize.
Yeah.
That they don't have to be extraordinary. I remember when I came back to the church and I was on fire. I thought I had to be preaching on a street corner or going on mission or something like that. And actually it was stumbling across the writings of St. Jose Maria that led me to understand that I could do that exactly where I was.
Yeah.
You know, like if the encounter I have with the teachers I work with or even the students. And I will say this, you know, I teach at a, you know, I work at a public school where it's not a lie that public education has become very anti-Christian because the majority of the teachers are atheist or agnostic, almost on an evangelical level.
Right, which is interesting that there's that need to evangelize inside of everybody at some level.
Yeah, but when students ask me questions, I answer them. And... you know, I don't use my position in a way where I'm preaching to the kids, but one-on-one, if they ask me a question, I'm going to answer. And then there's just some times where I just discern and I'll ask the kid, I said, can I pray for you? And then when good things happen, they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like I had one kid that had lost her laptop and I said, you know, I'm going to say a prayer to St. Anthony. She's not Catholic. She said, what is that? And I said, well, we have patron saints of various things, and St. Anthony helps people find lost things. I'm just going to ask him to help you find your laptop. And 5 minutes later, I get a text. You're not going to believe it. I found it.
Yeah. Like,
okay.
You know, it's funny. Have you heard the joke? What's the hardest thing about being a vegan? Keeping it to yourself. So they're very evangelical, you know, and it's about sharing something that they think is good.
Well, you're onto something there because we evangelize all the time.
Yeah.
We see a movie like, you know, when I was talking to everybody about Godzilla Minus One, or you like a new restaurant.
Yep.
You tell everybody.
Yep. You're always wanting to share the good news.
So share the good news with the capital G.
Yeah.
We wanted to know about your evangelization.
No, I don't have any.
That is not true.
That's not true. You have your coffee shop thing.
I do.
So talk about that and how it grew into being.
Okay. So after my first full welcome experience at St. Jude.
Welcome being the revamped CHRP.
Correct. Formerly Christ Renews His Parish, now it's Welcome. During both my time as retreatant and then when I moved forward with hosting, I formed a lot of bonds with guys. And I could see a lot of these guys becoming actual friends.
Right.
And then acquaintances with others, men that I just wanted to hang out with from time to time. And I wanted a way to stay connected to them. And so I invited everybody on, basically at that time, the host team, to coffee. We have a mom and pop coffee shop there in Allen that most people are familiar with, called Armor Coffee. Owned by the couple who does the HGTV show called No Demo Reno. They also bought a brewery in Allen called Armor Brewery, which is nice. They've got food and everything there. But it was a good way to stay. It's not a Starbucks, so the quality of coffee was a little bit better.
Yeah.
A little bit more welcoming atmosphere. And they didn't mind our presence. And so we went once. Everybody enjoyed it. So I just kept putting out the invite. And that was almost 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And we even survived the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because when the pandemic hit, we went to Zoom.
Virtual coffee.
We went to virtual coffee. Wherever you're at your house, grab a cup of Joe, meet on Zoom. Had a good turnout for a while. And the pandemic started to take its toll. And I ended up with like three guys.
Yeah.
Then I got asked to come back to a welcome weekend. And that gave me an opportunity to help reach out to more men. And then by the grace of God through the Holy Spirit, it became if you've gone to the retreat, and if you've at least gone to the retreat, you're invited basically. Whether you decide to go through formation or not, some guys do, some guys don't. But you're at that point, you're welcome to join us. We'll do the same every Saturday morning, darn near every Saturday morning. Same place, same time, no expectations. And I think it's through that avenue, that a lot of men have established a relationship with new men. There's new men they get to see in the parish. In fact, this last weekend we had several guys that didn't know each other. So that was cool. So you know they're going to say hi at Mass. It allows us to pray for one another. We have a GroupMe page. So there's a lot of prayer requests that go out. It's boosted. That's spun off from that a gathering page where basically, I think it's called Who's Down to Ball. And guys will be like, hey, let's go ride bikes. Let's go play basketball or pickleball. Or, I'm going to the lake. Who's in? And then that's also spun off. We did a Catechism in a Year page. A bunch of guys went through Catechism in a Year together. Mm. And now one of the guys wants to change that over to Bible in a Year for those that haven't done it or for those who would like to do it again.
Yeah.
And so...
is the Bible worth reading more than once?
I'm going to say yes. So I guess if that would probably be my biggest component of evangelization. I think it took me many years to see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was just, I want to stay connected to these men who I don't get to talk to or see otherwise a whole lot. And now recently, I've talked about one of the guys reaching out for help and not getting the response that he anticipated. And so that's allowed me, prompted me to up my own game so that now I'm a lot more conscious about reaching out to guys, especially guys I haven't heard from in a while, even if I've seen them in Mass, and just saying, hey, how are you? What's your life like? I'm bad about asking to pray for somebody, even within my Catholic circles.
Yeah.
But if an opportunity presents itself where they say something that clearly indicates prayers would most assuredly be not only welcomed but beneficial, I'm good about asking at that point, just not being proactive as I would like to be about it. So yeah. I don't think if there's any other key areas of my life where I'm good with evangelization. I'm not thinking that there is. I mean, you guys were talking earlier about, I thought it was cool what Dad said about the barista at Starbucks.
Yeah.
I've tried to do that, but one of the things that I've gotten better about is just stepping up my game with people inside Mass and outside of Mass. We got a new Scooter's Coffee in Allen. The woman who works the windows in the morning, she's social. Because they don't make your order until you're there. So it's ready. You already paid for it, but they want it to be nice, fresh, and hot for you. And so I'm deliberate about how I socialize with her. I'm a regular to Taco Cabana. Same thing. Hey, how are you doing? How are you handling this cold? You guys are awesome. I just want you to know I appreciate you. Same thing. Put an exhaust on my truck today. I'm going to go quiet it down a little bit more tomorrow. Fired off an email today to those guys, let them know, hey, I'm going to be back tomorrow for this. But even that email, I was deliberate about showing my gratitude.
Mm.
Like, I know it's a job, it's a service. They don't care. It's what they're paid to do. But I think that added step goes a long way.
Yeah.
And, I kind of, since I'm weak with those additives of, hey, do you have anything I can pray for you about? Or, if that's even whether something's mentioned or I kind of have that thought, I do wear my crucifix openly. So there's a part of me that hopes that that's seen and registers, hey, this guy's different.
Yeah.
And that maybe that plants even a small seed of some kind. So
it's interesting you mentioned the crucifix. So when I became a candidate with the Dominicans, I got a Dominican pin that I wore all the time. And I wore it daily for years. And then we had someone become a candidate and we were out of pins. And so I gave that person my pin. And so I haven't had my pin for 6 or 8 months now because our source dried up during the pandemic. And I miss wearing that pin. And it was a conversation starter. People would say, what is that pin? What does it mean? It was a just an easy, instant, oh, well, I'm a lay Dominican, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's why I was thinking earlier when you were talking, whenever there is a gathering at my work, like a meal or something like that, I'm always asked to say the blessing. And I was always trying to figure out, why am I the guy? Oh, well, that's why. Because they know, because I was wearing it on my chest, basically. We finally found a source, and so I'm finally going to get another pin, and I'll probably buy two, so that if I have to give one away, I'll have another one. So, yeah, I think those outward signs are useful.
What you reminded me of is the little things that we could do, like, praying over our meals.
Yeah.
Doing the sign of the cross, whether you pray out loud or quietly. You never know who's going to be watching you.
Right.
And I've had three instances that resonate with me. One, I was at a Popeye's fried chicken place, prayed over my meal, and a lady next to me started talking to me. She was Catholic. And we had a conversation. And then unbeknownst to me, because I did this at work all the time, and we used to have a communal meal with all the teachers, I found out about, a couple of years later, one of our teachers, she said, you're the reason I went back to the Catholic Church. I was like, oh, really? How's that? She said, I saw how every day you prayed with your meal.
Yeah.
And it touched me. So she went back to the church. She got her whole family back in the church.
Wow.
Then her two parents were very involved in their church with evangelization and prayer groups and Garcia movement and all of that. Just from her seeing me pray.
Wow.
And then more recently, again at a taco place, I was at Taco Casa, and I prayed over my meal and I did sign of the cross. And there was a family next to me, and the father was like, "Thank you for being open with your faith." I'm like, "Okay."
Wow.
And then the other thing I remember is I pass a Catholic church on my way to work every day. And in acknowledgement of the tabernacle inside that church, I do a prayer of spiritual communion and I do the sign of the cross every day. And this was years ago. I did not know that driving next to me was one of my church brothers. And he's like, "I saw you do the sign of the cross when you passed the church." And he wanted to know why. And I explained it to him. And it's just like, you never know when people are watching you.
Yeah. So for people listening, what is the explanation for why you do that?
Why I do what?
The sign of the cross when you drive past the church.
Because Christ is truly present in the tabernacle. Like 100%.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it.
Patrick and Jenny, when they drive past any cemetery, they do the eternal rest. Grant unto them, O Lord. They'll stop whatever conversation they're having, and they just say it. I think it's kind of neat.
They must pass Cemetery Hill all the time then.
Oh, absolutely they do.
There's a very old cemetery in the town that we live in. It's probably been here since this town was formed. It's a little bitty cemetery. That's what we're referencing.
So my thought experiment.
Okay. Hit us.
So, you know, I like words. And so I always think, you know, there are a lot of words that are synonyms. So why did different words exist? Because there's something, there's a reason why more than one word exists to describe similar things. And I'm thinking also about colors. So the joke is, you know, guys see like six colors, red, orange, yellow, black, blue, green. That's about it. And women see like 1,700 colors. You know, what color is this? It's pink. No, that's salmon. No, salmon's orange. No, it's salmon. You know, it's rose. It's, you know, all these different things. So here's my thought experiment or question. Is all evangelization preaching? And is all preaching evangelization?
Well, I think all preaching is evangelization. But I don't think all evangelization is preaching. Unless it really, what is the definition of preaching?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question.
Because you can preach without words.
And why is it called a homily in a Catholic church and not a homily in a like a Protestant church?
I don't know the definition of homily. I had menudo this weekend.
Yeah, so it's a hominy. Yeah.
Hominy.
First time I heard hominy grits, I was like, I don't know how many are in there. It's like hundreds of them.
Oh, you and your dad jokes.
Yeah, I know. That reminds me, I saw a little thing. A dad is sitting in a car and his son's sitting next to him and he goes, "Dad." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Sunday was a sad day." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "But the day before that was a Saturday." The look of pride and joy on the dad's face. You told a dad joke. It's pretty funny. So, yeah, what is the definition of preaching?
Well, I would say the definition of preaching is spreading the gospel. So, I know what it isn't. Going back to the gospel reading from today about the Pharisees, it's not thumping people over the head with a Bible or a catechism.
Right.
Because I tried that and it's very ineffective.
Yeah.
And it causes harm.
Hmm.
I think the short answer is everything's got to be rooted in charity.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
My thought has always been, because the other thing, this whole notion of boldness that's been resonating for 18 months, the other thing that's been a common theme is that God is the God, our God is the same God who performed all the miracles in the Bible. He's the God of impossible.
Yep.
He's the God of miracles. And so I've been very consistent about praying for all of my family to come into the Catholic Church because it's the fullness of truth. So why wouldn't I want them to have that? But I guess what I'm saying is we've got to play the long game. We got to trust in the Holy Spirit. And I think the burden that we carry, to go back to something you said, the responsibility. If people know that we are Christians, that they know that we're Catholic, then we have a responsibility to live that out in our daily lives. And we have to be different. Because if we're not different, then there's no attraction.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, so what?
Yeah. In fact, if you're not living it out daily, then you're just a hypocrite.
Yeah.
And that's a heavy burden. I mean, I was having this conversation with one of my coworkers the other day. Because I've been dealing for the last month or so, the fact that I had a pretty big argument with one of my coworkers, and we're starting to get past it, and there's some healing that's taking place. And she asked me a question. I don't remember what the question was. And I said, I think about it every day. She's like, really? And I said, yeah. I said, I can't believe what I believe and just let that go.
No.
And she had this look of bewilderment on her face when I said it. And I told her, I said, you know, being a Christian is not easy. Because my default is to be a jerk.
Yeah.
And I really want to use stronger language.
Yeah.
But I can't. And walk the walk. I just can't. And I'm human like everybody else. And there are times when I fail. And with this particular coworker, I failed. I mean, she did harm to me. But I didn't need to react the way I did.
Right.
So now I'm having to repair that.
Yeah.
But I think God uses that too. Because clearly this woman who I was talking to was like, I didn't know you took this sort of stuff that seriously.
Mm.
So that touched her.
Yeah.
So God used this argument to touch somebody else. So I guess at the end of the day, I think the message is really to be open to opportunities to be Christ to other people. And to realize that it's our job as the laity to be out there. I think at the end of the day, evangelization is about being Christ to other people. I think that's how we can be the most effective evangelizers. And not being afraid to invite people.
Right.
Like, when was the last time we invited somebody to Mass? Or to an event? And why are we afraid?
That's a really good question, and I can't answer that question. I don't know that I ever have.
I don't even remember the count, but it's a pretty high number. The number of times it is spoken in the Bible, be not afraid.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. I mean, what's the worst thing that would happen? You know, be a fool for Christ.
Yep.
And I think that's a good place to stop.
All right.
As always, smoke 'em if you got 'em.
Mark had to fact check me because he didn't think I could remember that on my own.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.